Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What I found works best is you lean in and start asking questions and inviting people and saying, hey, I'll share with you too. But start creating those environments for yourselves, because you can't just wait for it to happen. It happens easiest if you invite it in.
What's up, fam? This is your boy, JJ. We have an awesome mini mansode. I know it's a direct title, but hey, we got to get your attention somehow. I think you guys will enjoy it. I wish at, 24 years old, I would have someone that would just be direct and honest with me in the way that we're direct and honest with you guys in this episode. So, hey, before we jump in, Grant Skelton is a great friend of mine. He's got amazing content. If you work within ministry, I definitely highly advise you follow Grant, who also works deeply within vocational ministry, has a lot of great opinions and feedback and takes on the church, more specifically like the modern church and maybe where the traditional model of Sunday church the past three or four decades is kind of starting to get a little old and is really not the way to do church. And so Grant is a huge, huge, huge advocate for discipleship and fellowship, which, by the way, I would say the two things I'm loving, number one, for me, understanding the difference of mentorship and discipleship is very, very different. Discipleship is just simply doing life together, right? It's a great way that John Mark Comer says it is, it's apprenticeship. Okay, really the English translation of discipleship from the Bible should be apprenticeship. And then mentorship is, I think, something that is really awesome that you can do from afar. So if you can't do life together in the same city, in the same place, you can do mentorship, which is, hey, don't be the top of your fountain, like spiritually, emotionally, in your career, intellectually. Find someone who's 2, 3, 4, 5 years ahead of you and be consistently talking to them. Even as I say this, I'm like, shoot, I definitely got to go find my mentor, have a call with him, and book a call on his calendar. I think the big thing with mentorship or discipleship is we expect that someone is going to come and pursue us, right? They're going to disciple and mentor us. Every once in a while, you do find that. But hey, man, I want to be hungry out of humility to understand that the best thing for me as a Christian and as a man is someone speaking into my life with authority that I've given them permission to speak into. So, hey, as soon as I cut this camera off, I'm not going to be listening to this episode. I'm going to be talking to my mentor who is in Texas and saying, hey, we need to talk ASAP. And I'm also going to text the guys that I mentor and say, hey, let's talk. Okay. So I love you guys. And then in my DMs, I haven't gotten any DMs this week. I'm so sad, man. You guys have made me sad. I want you to think about it. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, hey, DM me, boys. My DMs are open to you. I get DMs from girls, but I prefer them from the guys. And just so you guys know, my social media is not ran by me. So if you are a girl, you can DM me. My team sees it. I sees it. That's my policy. I'm like, hey, there's not a single thing in my entire life, my bank account, my email, my Instagram, my LinkedIn that my wife doesn't have the password to that's not completely visible. For me, I'm like, why do I need privacy? Like, there is nothing for me to hide about anything in my life. I genuinely hope that someone could look at any part of my life and there is transparency and character there. So yeah, that's my policy in case you guys were wondering. In case for the females who wanted to DM me for advice about a guy that they're talking to, you can do it. Kate might see it, our social media girl might see it, but everything is kept in confidence. So if that's a helpful disclaimer, I always think it's helpful because in this day and age, man, I'm just like, you cannot ever be too transparent about how you live your life, especially as a man, as a Christian. Man, I just never want any of this stuff to ever be in question or gray. I never want to send an emoji emoji or a like or have anything under scrutiny that could be possibly misinterpreted. I'm talking way too long. I love you guys. Enjoy the episode today, and I will see you guys at the beginning of next season. Let's go. What's up, fam? I got the Grant Skeldon. Grant, you're usually the one interviewing people. Are you comfortable with the setup? Are you going to be okay today?
I am, if we're talking about this.
You're a very good interviewer, I will say. Not to just lavish you with compliments that gas you up, but like, you are a great interviewer.
Yeah, and I mean, so you know, bro, we hang out a lot, so I'm going to be asking you questions. Well, I want to always help make it a conversation. A lot of times you watch a podcast, and if you go as a guest, the person's just always waiting for the next question, waiting for the next question. It's like question answer. But my hope is, yeah, we have like awesome conversation.
Background on you, you're South African and Mexican, like awesome hybrid. You've wrote a book. I have it right here, actually, Passion Generation. I started reading it a couple weeks ago. You know, I know you talk about it a lot. It's for millennials, but my question for you, and by the way, I love the way that you write. It's just like you kind of cut out all the fluff and you're like right to it. Hey, my question for you is, what's the difference between millennials and Gen Z at this point, in your opinion?
The difference, I mean, they tend to go in 20-year increments for generations. So like Xers, boomers, millennials and Gen Z, I believe, are a lot more like than Xers and boomers are probably a little more like in what they grew up in. I mean, Xers would have been a generation that didn't grow up with technology in public school, if you will. Even millennials would have grown up with it a little bit more in like late middle school and in high school. Well, of course, Gen Z is growing up with it all the time. One thing they always measure is the amount of people that think, one thing that has been measured is the amount of people in a generation that think they could be famous, if you will. And I do think that is a difference that has been increasing. Social media has only given more access to the desire, and I would even say the ability, to be quote unquote famous. And that has continued to go from like 1 to 4 to maybe even like 1/3 of a generation. Like even JJ, for us, we would have grown up and people asked us in high school, what do you want to be when you grow up? For whatever reason, a lot of people think that they're going to be like in the NFL or in basketball, like in the NBA, or some pro or an actor. Like we tend to want to be the things that we see a lot and are praised and we somewhat have access to. And so there's a disproportionate amount of high schoolers that think they're going to be professional athletes. You don't see as many, I'm going to be a mechanic, or you might see some doctor and lawyer and stuff like that. However, I think one big difference is there's a lot more young people that think they can and actually probably know people who are quote unquote online influencers who get paid yes. to do that. And in a world where all the gatekeepers of almost every major industry that used to be who you had to kind of pay your dues to make it, let's say writing a book, you do not have to go with a publisher anymore. You could self-publish or starting being a reporter. You could become a reporter on social media, give social commentary on what's going on, whether it's the weather, sports, politics, name, like fashion, whatever it is, you could bypass the gatekeepers now. Same thing for so many arenas. You just do not, music, you can make your, you don't even have yeah. to work with adults anymore.
It's amazing.
To do that.
Yeah.
And so anyway, last thing I would just say with social media, TikTok, like even me, man, I got a TikTok. I've posted probably 9 TikToks. I got a TikTok that has 1.5 million views. It's one of Justin Bieber worshiping with Carrie Job, and that thing just blew up. So I think if I did that when I was 21 years old, I would be like, oh my God, like I need to start posting more. I got a moment right now to like build on this momentum. And so I would say that's one big difference, is the allure to social media, that they call them digital natives because they truly grew up from even birth to where they are now with a digital lens. Of course, as a baby, we weren't working with iPads. Millennials were not. And so I think that's a big difference. I think I've been saying lately that the next generation has been coddled by their parents. They've been criticized by their bosses. They've been confused by our culture. They've been cheated by their colleges, and they've been canceled for their convictions. They have also, that's what's happened to them, coddling by their parents, criticized by their bosses. I would say they've been cheated by their colleges because so few are getting degrees that lead to real jobs in their field of work. But also, what have they done to themselves? Because some of that's like the world they're growing up in. Like, debt is a reality that's way bigger now than it was for especially boomers. However, what have they also done to themselves? And I would say some things that we've done to ourselves or we focused on unwisely would be that we are consumed with technology, we are conquered by pornography, we are caged by comparison, we are coping with anxiety, and we are crippled by debt. And so these are a couple of things that I think kind of mark the next generation and the culture of the generation that this generation is growing up in.
Yeah, it's good. You know, you blew my mind. There was like four or five things right there that just blew my mind. And one of them was like that you can kind of measure a generation by their desire to be famous. And that famous right status now is so accessible. Like, that is the word. There's just so many barriers in every industry that have just been like decimated, that the accessibility to be famous is. But I would say, you know, one thing I love that I heard you talk about is we need heroes of the faith. And it doesn't just need to be the missionary. And it doesn't just need to be, you know, the person who's on platform with a microphone in their hand. I'm like, man, I think that's actually a reflection of culture where we all want to be a hero of something, right? And there's like, there's heroes of lawn care now on TikTok with 3 million followers, you know? And
that's,
and
true.
That's, yeah, the only...
Or power washing.
Right? The power washing guys, I love them. It's so therapeutic. But I'm like, that's a hero of the power washing industry. But anyone who's not that right feels like they haven't maybe made it. And that's kind of like the status symbol of today's...
No, you're so right. Yeah, in a way, it's like, I didn't think about that even the blue collar work that tends to attract maybe the personalities that are not seeking to do what they're doing for any type of glory or fame. They enjoy the work, or they're really good at the work, but they seem to maybe be the personalities that are a little bit more to themselves. Like, blue collar work is unseen work in a lot of ways. But that is introducing a whole new element that you could almost see, oh, there's a new carrot that I was really good at what I'm doing. I was respected in my community. I'm considered one of the best amongst my peers in this arena, but I'm not getting like millions of views for what I do. Like, that may, and how much pressure probably comes from their kids or their grandkids or even their peers and their team saying, you got to start posting this online. You got to start creating a TikTok. And yeah, there's a social pressure.
I want to ask you about your single life, because I hear you talk a lot about how you're leading, how you're pulling into next gen, talking about next gen itself, talking about marriage. But I've never heard your single story, which I'm so excited to. But before we do, I asked all my guests. Will Chung answered this one last week. He had a great answer. Andrew Carter the week before had a great answer. Would you rather fight an ostrich to the death or fight a shark? And the worst thing that can happen
is... whatever it is with the shark.
No. The shark, you won't die. The worst thing that can happen is you'll lose a limb.
No, just what on ostrich. One, I hate sharks. Like, that's literally my worst fear. And so if I thought you were at least going to say, oh, nothing's really going to happen. Like, you just get a pinch. And then you said, I lose my leg and I got to be with a shark. Like,
yeah, but you won't die. So you're going to take the ostrich.
Oh, sorry. To the death, to my death. I'm like, I thought you were like, are you okay with murdering an ostrich or getting a leg? I was like, yeah.
You and the ostrich are like in an arena and you're like looking at each other. It's like only one of us gets to leave. And then the shark, you can try and fight to the death, but you won't die.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume most people pick the shark because...
Shark?
You're really asking the question, do you want to live or die?
No. I mean, would you take your chances against the ostrich? Is what I'm saying.
Oh, to the death, but I'm not promised death. Then yes, I'm not going to die to an ostrich.
You're going to kill that ostrich.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I love it. It's personality. Like, you think you can take an ostrich on, or
I maybe need to Google ostriches because I did not know they were a threat to humanity.
A lot of people underestimate an ostrich, but I'm dying to see it. Like, this is the one time where I'm like, I kind of do wish I was living in the Roman Empire, because there would have been a good chance we would have seen this happen.
Amen.
So, okay, hey, as a single man, so you were single from what age to what age, would you say?
I mean, when you kind of start dating is usually around middle school or high school, depending on your parents. And I think mine was like late middle school to single around middle school to 30 years old.
Okay. So a good little while. And then how you and, I saw you and Cheyenne dated for 3 years. Is that roughly how long?
We dated, about 3 years. Yeah.
Okay. So before Cheyenne, you got single Grant. Would you say, you know, you were always like who you are today? Like, were you always, and what I mean by that, like, you work with a lot of leaders. Were you always a high performer, always self-aware, never wasting time?
Yeah. People ask, when did you get serious about discipleship? It all goes back to salvation for me. And I was so, so fortunate to actually get saved about a month after a 3-year relationship I was in before Christ. She was the captain of the hip hop team at my school. I was on the basketball team. I always say it was a ghetto high school musical in the making. She was like very well known. I was pretty well known. And she was actually a really good girl. And I wasn't making the most wise decision. I definitely wasn't a Christian. And but I had never cheated on her. So to find out that she cheated on me and has been sleeping with this other guy just like crushed me. But because of the kind of school I grew up in, and I thought, man, this is going to be so embarrassing, because people thought we were high school sweethearts who were going to get married. And I think we generally thought that too, although we were hitting like a rough patch a little bit. It's kind of like the longer a couple is together, the more people are like, when are you going to get married? The more well-known that those two people are, they always ask, when are you going to get married? And since we were kind of seen and somewhat popular in the school, it was just heartbreaking. I actually ended up not telling any of my friends, even my closest friends at first, because I thought this is going to make me look bad. One is what I was most importantly thinking about. But then also I was like, it will also make you look bad. So she was also thinking of herself. I was like, yeah, it will make me look terrible. And she was the good girl. So for her to really do that was very out of character. So we just decided, let's not tell anyone and let's just break up. And if people say, why'd you break up? We just decided to break up, not give as much detail. So to save face, we did that. But without the community and confession and any type of healing, it's all imploding on ourselves. And for me, I'm carrying that and feeling like I can't. This was the girl who I was the most vulnerable with, which I think, since I'm speaking to men, all men kind of know, a lot of men know that that feeling of when you meet a person, a female that you like, decide to kind of let your guard down a little bit more, be a little more vulnerable, show a side of yourself that maybe you haven't shown or don't even get to show to many, even men. So there's a softness that comes out in those moments. And she had gotten to receive that from me. And I never really given that to any other person, let alone girl. So to be then betrayed is like so crushing. And you almost don't want to do that again. And you kind of don't want to drop your guard again. And long story somewhat short is that same week, I was not clearly having a good week. I was carrying all this inside. Everyone's asking why we're breaking up and I'm lying about why. And I get into it with one of the players during practice on the basketball team. And my same week, I get cut off the basketball team by my coach. And so I would not have used the language at the time, but my identity, the two things I put them in, which we often put, of course, our identity, especially starting in high school, is what we're good at or what we're known for. And we still kind of do that for the rest of our life. It's a temptation, even as a Christians. What am I known for? What am I good at? How do I become even better at that? Become known even more for that. And for me, it was basketball, and it was this relationship, this girl. We were known. You and Lauren are dating. Gosh. And then me, I try not to say her name, but no one knows who that is. And it's the most generic name. And then you're playing basketball and now you're not on the team anymore. And you guys broke up. What happened, bro? And it was hard. It was a hard month. And eventually I went to church. I went to a youth group for the first time I ever went to church on my own volition, where I didn't desperately want to go, but my mom said, hey, I can tell you something's going on and this is really heavy on you. Can you, you should go check out church. And she's like, I know I try to take you to church sometimes and I never liked the church. She took me to her church, but she's like, there's a church in town that's like more for youth. And it's more, it's that, it was one of the more fun big mega churches in town. And I did know a lot. It was more of a, I called it a fun church, where it's like, it's pretty easy. You mostly have fun and there's a little short message. So I was like, you know what? I'm down. I am down. I'm single. I, at the time, I'm like, I know a lot of hot girls go to that church because I knew the schools they came from. So I actually dressed preppy because, yeah, just preppy for the first time in my life. And me and my friend on the basketball team, we go to this church, sit in the back row. And a couple of things happened, man. One, I met a youth pastor that really, I think he could tell by the, just, he knew we were new there. This church had about 600 high school students. So it was pretty big. Like there'd be times there's about 1,000 high school students. So it was a big youth ministry. But he approached us right away. He's like, oh, you guys play basketball? He brought over this guy who was a volunteer, who was a like defensive end on the Dallas Cowboys, who was their volunteer on Wednesday nights. And he's like, yeah, this is Kenyon. He's like, we play basketball all the time. You should come play with us. It was the first time I had ever met a Latino Christian, because the church my mom took me to didn't have Christians that look like me. And so that also, you never see people that look like yourselves. It doesn't give you vision for yourself as a believer. And then two, I just felt like kind of welcome and like, hey, these guys are pretty cool, like pretty chill. I sit in the back row. I hear a story about the power of identity and putting it in the wrong things. It was actually a guy who won the state championship in football in Texas, which is massive. And he just shared his testimony of how he actually had the most empty moment of his life was when he won the state championship, because he had dedicated so much of his life and identity towards it. He said how his father seemed to have loved him more, connected with him more over football. Girls liked him more. The school liked him more. So he thought when you win the state championship, which is huge, they make movies about it. The whole nation kind of knows Texas football and that championship is big. He thought when I held it, it would be like huge. And he said, actually, I was so disappointed. I was like, this is it. Like, that's all. And then the night is even a big crash. And all that to say, I think God and the Holy Spirit convicted me. This dude won in his identity of success in sports, and he felt empty. I lost my identity in sports and in this girl, and I feel empty. There's got to be something more. And they actually played this song. So I switched foot. I had never heard of that band before, called This Is Your Life.
Yes.
And the lyric is, this is your life. This is who you want to be.
Yeah. Love Switchfoot.
And that question was the perfect question. This is your life, which I was like, okay, because of my decision, this is my life. I'm in this broken, like, kind of like, just getting by state where I don't know what's next for me. I don't know where my identity is supposed to go now. And again, I didn't use that language. I just didn't know like what everything I built towards is gone now. And then it's like, is this who you want to be? I'm like, no. And I'm like, I'm going to go towards Christ. So it's a long way to say that's my salvation story. And why I share it is because 2 weeks later, that youth pastor that embraced me when I first came, he called me and said, hey, I saw you gave your life to Christ. I saw the school you go to. That's a really difficult, diverse, rough school. And I've been trying to reach that school for years, and it's been so hard. He said, how serious are you about your faith? And I told him, man, I just started talking about it, because I didn't tell anyone for 2 weeks I became a Christian. I was actually deciding in that like day or two that I am going to start sharing, because I thought I might come back, say I'm a Christian, and then 2 weeks later, I go back to everything else. And I've seen people do that. And he just said, well, if you want to take it serious, I will take you under my wing. I will pour into you and disciple you. I'll even put you in a small group of young leaders that I'm pouring into, which was basically 12 kids that he had selected within the 1,000-person youth ministry to pour into to become student leaders among the rest of the high schoolers. And he's just like, my one thing is, if I'm going to pour into you and I'm going to put you in this leader group, you have got to go be a leader at your school. And you got to try to reach as many kids for Christ as you can over the next 2 years before you graduate. And I was like, all right, I'm down. Like I think that moment is what set me up for, yeah, I've always been like maybe high performing or a leader type. I would say immediately, because this dude, I mean, of course, gave me a relationship with God is what I just vertically started. Then I had a vertical relationship, which most people don't get, not just with God, but then quickly after salvation with a mentor who was guiding me closer to God.
Yes.
And then I had a horizontal mission he had also challenged me with right away. go reach as many people for Christ as you can.
Yeah, amen.
And that really helped a lot.
I mean, there's so many places I want to go with that. But since this is a group for single men, right, and what where they're at in their life, the one thing I would probably, of like 10 that I want to ask you about is that heartbreak. And one thing I love about you, and what I praise God all the time, is that this millennial Gen Z generation, and even the ones above us, have finally started taking emotionally healthy spirituality seriously. We got Jeff Vanderstel coming up next week. Cannot wait to talk about emotional health as a man with him, like the best. Emotionally Healthy Spirituality is one of our favorite books, Pete Scazzaro. You know, they have courses with churches all over the world, which is how you know they're doing something right. But talk to me before we talk about, you know, the men that you see in day-to-day life and what you see with men wasting time. I just want to ask you, like, that emotional pain of being cheated on, you know, the internal, like, you know, turmoil, becoming a Christian, and how so many times, like, this is my dad to a T, you become a Christian, I'm a new creation in Christ, I'm going to memorize these verses, Jesus sees me in my pain, and I'm going to move forward. Did you have to emotionally, as you dated as a young man, started talking to women again, putting yourself out there, getting vulnerable again, did any of that ever come up for you? And what did that maybe story of healing look like for you, especially as a guy where we're not keen to talk about, right, getting cheated on emotionally, having, you know, a really hard time with that? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I would not say good, bro. Like, I don't want to say that I did emotional health well. In fact, you even bringing up that exact book of Emotionally Healthy Leader, I call that book like my second salvation.
Wow.
And I read that book in 2018. And so a handful of years ago, and that was, I would call again, second salvation, almost like we have the salvation moment that is the most major milestone moment that shifts the trajectory of our life. But there's a handful sometimes, and I don't even know what to put. That's one of the biggest, to where it's so big that it's more than just, oh, that's when I learned this. It's like, no, I reoriented my life and my scorecard based off this whole theme. And it's funny you did bring that up, because usually I was gonna say, you know, in your single years, what I really focused on is the mission of God, really, really good friends, amazing mentors. But the fourth one, I was like, I gotta put this, is because what I regret and wish I would have done more is what I would call a finish well pace, as well as just emotional health in general, because the pace I was going, the scorecard, the cadence, all of it. I wasn't like absolutely crushing people, but I just needed to take care of me better. And I wish I would have learned that earlier. In fact, Cheyenne was a major role. My current wife, for y'all that don't know Cheyenne, you said, we were together 3 years. We were together 3 years, but she did break up with me because I was just going way too fast and way too much. And my life was a bit of a mess. And in the sense that it was like my health, my pace. It's not like I was like doing all these terrible things. It's just like nothing that needed to be good. Like my room, I feel like visually showing my room was just a whole bunch of clothes all over the place. Cause I would come in, pack some new clothes into the bag, and then go speak at some other thing or go do some other thing. I was like living on a plane. And it was, my thought was, when you're single, you want to spend it well, like pouring your life out for Christ. And the disciples did a lot of ministry, and they didn't always get to like be the most peaceful people ever. They got persecuted. It was hard. But there was one lesson I learned through that, is God's never called you to do so much for him that you're losing your relationship with him. And I started doing that. And now I have a way better gauge. But yeah, the early days, I think I wish I would have maybe paused on dating and definitely not even dating, just especially processing all of that with people. But I don't think that was as glorified at the time.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will say a lot of men change, and it's oftentimes because they find a woman who's worth changing for, or is like loving and kind enough and truthful enough to say, hey, this needs to change. Like, you're not who you think you are. You're not as great as you think you are. Right. And then they kind of lovingly encourage you into emotionally, I'd say emotionally, right? It's probably that biggest bucket. Like, we walk around, we know God's word, we know our mission, we know purpose, we know calling, but we emotionally, right, are just like so infantile in sense of being able to be vulnerable with our feelings, connecting our feelings with Jesus, and being able to even speak about our feelings with a wife, with a friend. And you did this. I actually stole a quote from you. I try to give you credit as much as possible, but I know you steal quotes too. but you know, you say as men, we like to humiliate each other horizontally, right? But that friendship, that deep friendship of, hey, like, what if we just put that on pause? Because if all you're doing is humiliating and joking with each other, then that's all your friendship is, right? Like, there's no depth, there's no vulnerability, there's no emotional substance to your relationship. And I think as guys, that is like the fire pit at its finest. We're all sitting around joking. It's like, who wants to jump off first, right? Who wants to be that catalyst to really rich, vulnerable conversation? Like, hey, I'm actually not doing so well. Like, right now, I'm not doing so well.
Yeah. And JJ, what I've also even found is I've gotten a group of young couples, and you know, most of them, like Corey and Ryan Ard and Chi Chi, Tracy on Yekene, and then Hannah and Aaron, who we just talked about, Barnett. We tend to go and get away once a year and just really share what's going on in our marriages. And I want to credit them. They've been really good friends. Where me and Cheyenne's marriage, every year there seems to be like we share a little bit, and there tends to be a marriage or two that's like struggling a little bit more than the others. And if I'm honest, yeah, it was ours. Like, we needed to reassess our pace again and just say, hey, we need to bring y'all in. And Corey especially, but the whole group, they're like, all right, we want to talk to y'all about putting in what they called extreme accountability. Like, not just, hey, we talk here and then hope you guys follow through. Is like, we're going to check in. And what I have found is for accountability, you do have to in an ideal world, people would be asking these questions already and just be asking you the hard questions, because I do think it's a sign of love and care, because it's way easier to just go through the motions and hope everything's okay. But it's actually a good friendship or care to ask hard questions and saying, hey, I actually am willing to maybe look bad or be put in an awkward position because I want to make sure like that someone's asking these things. And there's the right people in the right time and the right place and all that. But those guys have done that really well. In an ideal world, someone would already do that. But if they don't, I don't think we just wait till people do. I think what I found works best is you lean in and start asking questions and inviting people and saying, hey, I'll share with you too. But start creating those environments for yourselves, because you can't just wait for it to happen. It happens easiest if you invite it.
Amen. And one of my favorite is, hey, if you don't have great community, if you don't have someone following up with you, be that person to someone else. Like, be relentless about pursuing others and inviting them in, inviting yourself in, you know, because you know it's so important. Okay. So I know you prep a couple notes. I am just curious. I know you guys love Barna. You're close to Barna. And I just want to ask you, so we're more single than ever before. Fun fact, in the U.S. population, we're 51% single. And that is also reflected in the church. It's anywhere from about 25 to 33% single. Why? And it's obviously going up every year. Why is that?
Man, I think hopefully what's great is I'm assuming you ask a lot of people this question, so you're getting so many angles, because there's like a list of things I'm thinking through. Let's talk about the one that hasn't been addressed already. But I do think there's so many options that makes it hard. For example, I remember when Spotify came out, I thought, I can't imagine this idea of Spotify. Like, I'm going to be able to listen to whatever song I want to listen to, and only that song. I don't have to buy the whole album just because I like one song.
You don't have to physically
go to the store. I can just like get it right away. And so that goes into the second thing of all the options. You never had access to as many options. It used to be, I went to a 5A school in Texas. I think now there's 6A, maybe. I wouldn't even doubt that there's maybe 7A schools. But I always thought, man, when you go to like a 1A or 2A, like just small town school, I don't know what that's like, but I prefer the bigger one because it's just more options. And if you date one or two girls, you probably didn't just even date them. Now you dated the only like two or three friend groups of girls. So you can't even date the other girls. Like everyone's like probably in your business. I don't know small town fully, but I feel like that's what I hear. And so imagine that time X, like 10X, 20X, 30X, because you can do across your country, not even just in your city, which is still big, depending on the kind of city you live in. So immense options. I think with social media and dating apps and just the culture of today, it's also, we're so used to not having to do as much work. I kind of joke about Spotify. When you get Spotify, I don't think we remember the days when you had to record the songs you wanted by creating your own album, but you had to record it once it hit the radio, or you had to buy an entire CD, even though you wanted only like two or three songs, and you had to physically get up and go purchase an actual thing that costs more than the subscription of endless and countless songs today. So it's like the whole
system. Be honest, did you LimeWire? Did you use LimeWire and crash your family desktop?
You could steal from the hardworking musicians
and pre-Jesus days. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and many have and did. And so there's just the amount of work that it took was more. The options were less, and now as the options are more, the work is less. And then I even would say the profiles or like the heroes have really changed. This may be the most controversial view I've kind of had, but it's something I'm thinking through. Is I do feel like this like whether there's toxic masculinity or even like a lack of any type of masculinity when you have an identity-less male generation and I feel like there's a lot more identity actually in female generation. Like you will get praised a lot faster for being a woman than a man will be praised for being a man. Like that makes it hard, whereas like men can sometimes get in trouble for being, especially, I don't know, it's like some things of being a traditional man is really, really good, and some things are like, no, that's not traditional man, that's like, that's male, that's like male chauvinist, that's the past, that's like archaic. And it's a lot of landmines, I feel like, for men today, where I don't feel like there's as much landmines for women. If anything, I feel like you can't get onto her for being that or the complete opposite of that. And it's like there's a big playground, I feel like, sometimes for women and men. There's a verse that says you got to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves, and so it's unique. And I think all that is to say that can create no one wants to go into the dating scene and feel like there's landmines everywhere. And so these reasons are actually counterintuitive to the women of faith, where it's maybe making it a lot harder. And lastly, like there are a lot less guys in church. If there's anything we've both, I'm sure, heard over the years, is where are all the guys at? I do think there's a factor of that where it's like, oh, the guys, there's many guys that you are overlooking. However, there are less guys, there are less options. I want to see more churches that are designed for men, maybe even primarily and not just women, because statistically, when a man goes to church, their family tends to follow. That's just the numbers. I don't know why it's designed that way, but they've shown studies of like what happens when a man or a husband and a father comes to church. And I remember it was like, there was like a 60%+ chance, maybe even a 70% chance that the wife and the children will follow. And it went down to, I think, 26%. If the wife comes to church, there's a 26% chance that the father and the husband and the children will come. It was only like 12-6%, somewhere around there. So like it incrementally goes down. If the kid then goes to church, will the parents follow? And so there's a lot of influence a man has in the home, and there's a strength he brings, totally, and a little bit of leadership that he can bring, and influence.
And you could see the best culture that, you know, the enemy in secular culture could ever take to targeting, you know, healthy relationship is by absolutely making that man terrified to take a step in any direction.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? The weightless man who's just, you know, in the ocean, being tossed by the waves with no wind and a sail, no sail, no rudder, just so terrified. And that is, you know, we talked to a lot of guys. I would say by far and away, it's paralysis by choice, right? Just so much choice. And two, paralysis by just, you know, it is, there's a lot of fear out of like a healthy desire to respect women, to love women well, but like they don't feel like they, it's like their one hand's tied behind their butt back, the left hand's tied to their foot, you know, and they feel like they can only do so very few things right, which just attacks confidence. I tell guys all the time, like, hey, you can be confident that you like this girl and you want to ask her out, but that doesn't also have to mean you approach her in this hyper alpha macho 7 p.m. Friday night, I'll see you there, vroom vroom, you know, drive off on your bike. You can be confident in the fact, like, hey, I know you, I know your character, I know I would love to ask you out. If you don't think, you know, we can do that and just stay friends after, if you are not feeling that at all, no worries at all, you know, so you can be polite and kind and also be confident in what you want.
No, I agree. It's definitely unique times. And there's a quote I remember Billy Graham had, something to the effect of like, whenever a man is bold, then it stiffens the back of other men. And so I think there is a contagious factor of boldness, and I would say like channeled meekness for sure. It doesn't need to be overpowering. So much of life, and especially even in the church and Christians, was the swinging of the pendulum to like the exact opposite of
totally
from there's somewhere where it's like over dominating. It can't then be to like, okay, I'm passive. There's an intentionality. There is a protection, and there's a lot of amazing things that are missed if you just swing the pendulum to the other side.
Totally. I love thinking about really any matter as a matter of a pendulum. It's like, how do we settle this thing right back down smack in the middle? Whereas like decade to decade, we'll kind of swing back and forth. But so my question for you is, because I love that I've heard you in bits and pieces talk about playing Xbox. Like, I know you got a gamer side. I know you got a fun side. You know, for me, that's probably a huge, if I could summarize my singleness in one word, I would just say, three words, devoted to pleasure, like devoted to fun. And in retrospect, I would just say I was really good at wasting time and still being a Christian. Do you see that with men today? And really, if you have a guy in front of you who's kind of like in that same place, you know, where would you say, hey, bro, like, I love you and you have a mission. Like, I know you and a few other leaders this year have really been reviving the verse, live in a manner worth your calling, right? Like, I love you, bro. And I can't let you walk out of this place just wasting your calling by just being devoted to fun and pleasure your whole entire free time in life.
I mean, you can do that. And that's the hard part about just having a lot of fun is if you're a Christian and you're just having fun, but you're not falling into sin, it's these like gray area pleasures, if you will, which like they're totally okay. It just starts to feel like a gray area when you're focusing on them more than you're focusing on the mission of God, the things that really are going to matter in the long run, then that's when I think they start being drawn into question. But it's so hard because they're not, it's not a right or wrong thing. It is like right or left. Like I'm pretty open that I play video games, and I play not only video games here and there, like I play pretty often. And I play like with my wife. I often want to build games around community. So like the last time I played was a couple days ago, and we had a couple that came and played with us. And I like when it's community building, not just online community, unless those are like my friends, not complete strangers.
Yeah.
Regularly.
But not like escaping.
Yeah. Not escaping, but like, and I'm not going to act like, hey man, I'm so much closer, or I don't even try to act like, oh, this is my evangelistic outreach. I don't do that. I don't have tattoos for evangelism purposes, though I'm always open if that happens. That's not why I got my tattoos, and I don't try to lie.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted this verse to remind me. I'm like, bro, if that's what you need to remind you, it's permanent. Like, I just, these things we say. So they're in the gray. It's the nature of things that are in the gray. But I would say again, I focus a lot on mission, and then all the other stuff tends to, in relation, the most key relationships, and then that stuff comes afterwards. But I even want those to, I mean, my mission is to also help people and connect people and give them deep and meaningful relationships. So if they can be, if gaming can be like an element or conduit to get us a little closer, it can't be everything we do. Like, there is a point of even watching a movie together or Netflix, where Netflix and a good story, like a really good story, can be thought-provoking. But if it's like, are you still watching? And then, are you still watching? Or do you want to watch the next episode? There is this point where this is no longer thought-provoking. It is mind-numbing.
Right. And that's where, you know, there was a great Tim Keller sermon, which, by the way, I just saw the clip. You getting roasted by Tim Keller has got to be like the most all-time moment of... If I had to get roasted by anybody, I would be honored.
Yeah. It's so crazy. Yeah. In that clip, he said, because he was in a very playful mood that day that I was interviewing him. And he's like, Grant, you need a, you know, this guy's, blah, blah. He was just getting on to me about a joke that was very obvious to me. But then he said, you need a mentor. And I regret so badly that I didn't say, I volunteer as tribute if you're saying you want to mentor me. Like, I wish I would have said, like, bro, are you offering? Like, bro, let's do it in front of everyone right now. Do you believe in the yeah, next generation or not? Because you can disciple me. I should have flipped it on him and put him on the spot right now. I was like, okay, yeah, you're right. I do need a mentor. How much do you believe in the next generation? You down to do it
so
right here?
So funny. Dude, that would have been epic. That would have been so, so kosher. All right. Well, you got that in the back pocket in case, I don't know who you would ask today, but speaking of which, you know, I know you're so big on discipleship, and we'll kind of end on this note. You feel like the single men you see, I love that you work specifically with leaders. I think you work with a lot of high performance guys who probably out of self-awareness need, you know, realize that they need help. What about, you know, what I would probably say there was a majority of us, you know, maybe not that self-starter, discipleship, you feel like that's the key to just men reaching men and encouraging them and showing them, right, how to rise, how to not waste time, how to be that man of God they desire to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a view that different people land in different places. But I think in your single years, if I was going to focus on relationship, I would focus on the relationships, especially when it comes to my friends and my mentors. That's going to be my first and second relationships. I'm going to focus on my single years more so time-wise than energy, than the dating relationship. And I'm not saying that third is so unimportant. Third is still an important place. It's just you have a lot more control over your friendships, and you're going to spend a lot more time with your friends than a potential person you might start talking to. And that those also people tend to last a lot longer, not than a wife or a husband, but than a girlfriend or a boyfriend or a fling or a date. They have more lasting power. They tend to be very formative in the trajectory of your story, especially your career. The power of not hanging out with driven friends, just even driven Christians, compared to just Christians that are like getting along with life. There's a lot of Christians that aren't falling into sin, but they're also, I would say, not being obedient to mission either. And so like they're, to me, I actually often think if I was the enemy, I'd be like, I don't even need to tempt a lot of these Christians to do anything sinful. As long as they just don't do anything of obedience, they're ineffective in the mission of God. And I think there's millions of young Christians like that, where it's like, okay, we're not getting drunk or wasted or doing drugs or sleeping around all the time or all clubbing. It's like, no, they're not doing these things to disqualify themselves. They're just not doing the things that they've been called to that are going to impact people's lives, that are going to save the eternity of others. And so I want to be around Christians that like, and I was very focused on this in college, is like, I want to be around people that are moving. Like they got to be, they got to have traction. They got to be, at least have a little bit of clarity or like very intentionally seeking clarity on God's calling for their life. Like those, they're focused on the primary calling to Jesus in that relationship, and then the overflow secondary calling of their mission. And generally, like people say, you're going to then find who is the type of Christian spouse and relationship that wants to go that same direction, wants to go at that pace, wants to be around that nature of life. Because I see a lot of young people, they're like, well, I got to get married first, then I'll think about what I want to do. But there's so much pressure, especially in Christian circles, the ring by spring mentality of just find your spouse. And I personally think, we don't talk about too much, is then that kind of sometimes turns your spouse, as men do this a lot with women, especially pastors, is it turns your wife into a stepping stone into your ministry. And I would say, man, go all out. And that person and the right person with the right, against cadence, character, all of that is going to be around for a while. And you're like, man, this girl keeps being around. And that means they're kind of, they're running again, the same type of pace around the same kind of people, the same kind of motives, core values, convictions. That would be my focus, is the relationship with friends is really, really big. Cause I think you spend more time with your friends than even your mentor and those who disciple you. But second, then who's pouring into you, who's discipling you. The more time you spend with older people, the more messed up in all the right ways you're going to be. Cause if you're just looking to your left and your right, your goals, your vision for your life, what you think is possible, is very limited to just what your friends have. So it's like, oh, we're all looking for jobs. Well, yeah, no one here has a job, and everyone else is looking for a job, and we're all like, your vision is very limited. You start hanging out with people that have networks, resources, tons of experience, tons of connections. All of a sudden they're like, yo, I know like five people that are looking for a guy like you to hire. They just don't know any young people. Wait, you're telling me you know some young people like that, that have character, they're consistent, they're hardworking? It's like, can you connect us? It's like, there are, the best thing the enemy's done is divide generations.
I agree to
get the wisdom and the connections and the resources of the older generation away from the creativity and the passion and the free time of the next generation.
Yeah, I mean, and what you just said is, it's Matthew 6:33. It's seeking first the kingdom, right, and his righteousness, and surrounding yourself with people who are obsessed with that same mission. And, you know, and I love the way that you talk about discipleship and rubbing off, right, that guy. I don't know about you, but when I'm around a guy who does anything better than me, anything, working out, podcasting, you as an interviewer, right? Just anyone who, like, whether my faith, personal life, a husband who's just like hands and knees dying to self and serving his wife. I have a choice in the, Andrew Cardner, I were actually just talking about this last week. I have a choice in that moment. And it's so funny. I either in my mind make up an excuse for why I can't be like that guy, or two, I accept that challenge and like, man, I want to be like this guy. I really do want to mimic a model and do as he does. But I feel like when I'm faced with someone who does something better than me, it's like that right or left. You know, there's no like gray in between.
Yeah, it is interesting how relationships can motivate you more than like 100 pieces of advice we've gotten to do the same exact thing. But then you get in a relationship with, whether it's someone around your same age and a friend who's like just so driven, and you're like, man, that person is so much different than the way I live. But also the fruit of what they get because of that is the kind of life I want to have, but I'm not doing the kind of work that they're doing to have that. And it like automatically, they never said anything to you, and it motivates you to like, I'm going to step it up. Like they, without a word, they just motivated you to step it up. And relationships do that too. And that's the beauty of dating as well, is my brother right now, he is the most motivated I've ever seen when it comes to his career and his focus and like just being intentional of like, man, I want to get in a new type of field of work and a more serious field of work. And I've been trying to tell this boy for years. And y'all don't know me as well, but one of my superpowers, by the grace of God, is I get the privilege to be super connected to very amazing young Christians that I want to pour into, and I want to help them have community. So I'm always like, Luke, I would love to help you, bro. And the music scene and then this and that, but like, he hasn't been as interested. And now he's talking to a girl who's like owns his properties, flipping houses, owns her own home, owns a couple other properties. And I'm like, dude, thank God she's down to date someone who's not as established, but she's being patient with him and motivating him. And is like, hey, you think about this or this. And bro, he's so driven. And again, it's relationship. And a lot of it came way before she ever, he's asking questions now. And he's really seeking in a way I haven't seen him seek. And so it's the power of good relationships with good people who are, again, moving.
Yes. It, bro, it's so funny. It's a guy will change when he hits rock bottom. Maybe he's self-aware or he meets a beautiful girl that he wants to level up for. Hey. And those.
Yeah, absolutely, bro. You're, I mean, you'll never see a room get clean so quickly after months of denial and just a car that's just been like water bottles for years. You'll never see it get as clean as when the guy meets a new girl like that he's interested in. All of a sudden, the Axe body spray is out.
Bro, I listen. I met Kate. I had blue hair, black earrings. I was a total clown, just enjoying my singleness, and that whipped me into shape like nothing else. I'm so serious. Yeah. And the best part about that is God can use any catalyst in your life to drive you closer to Him. And that's really, you know, a huge part of my story is I love God and I really sought after Him. But the thing that really took me from a young man to a man was finding, you know, a woman like Kate who is worth, but I couldn't lead her in a manner worth her calling or mine until I could step up and lead myself in that kind of capacity. So, I think, listen, I would have loved to have had that moment where it's just me and God in singleness, but it wasn't. But I think God's grace is sufficient in the sense of He uses all catalysts. And so there's probably a guy listening here, you know, who's just going to ignore this until he finds the girl worth leveling up for, or, you know, he experiences that heartbreak or, you know, empty pockets. But, yeah. Hey man.
Yeah. I was just going to say on that, JJ, sorry, is like, even you saying, I know it'd be ideal to have that moment when it's like a time, a quiet time with God. Even like I've asked JP, who I know is a close friend to you guys in the ministry. Do you think that you have to hit a burnout season to prioritize emotional health? And sometimes I really think you may. I don't like that. I used to always say this is I want to not learn from my mistakes. I want to learn from other people's mistakes. And so you got to start getting to a point where it's like, man, I keep getting advice for a while and not following it. And then all of a sudden I come around and realize, why the heck did I listen earlier? And I've started adopting the practice. If I hear a handful of adults say the same thing and they're older than me, I think they're wiser than me, and they don't even know each other and they keep saying the same thing, then I need to listen. Like there's something there, and I'm either going to listen now or I'm going to listen in a very sad state later when I'm like feeling the lesson. But also with the whole like having that time and the quiet time is how we may come to that conclusion with God. God does send people, like you said, and it's actually a primary way that he communicates messages. He sends judges, he sends prophets, he sends priests, even the gospel. Like, I don't think we think about this enough, is that he could have written the gospel on the moon, like, and we could have seen it through a microscope. We could have had so many ways that it is written, like, on stones. It could have been on mountains. It could have been so many places where we daily hear the songs. The birds could have sang verses. Like, there's what God could do to make sure we know the gospel just through creation alone. But he instead, like, literally sent his son. So he sends messengers. That was why we need to be on mission, is that we have what Jesus often said, we don't think about as much too, is he asked for us to have eyes to see and ears to hear. And he regularly asked that, like, God, give them eyes to see and ears to hear. They don't know what they do. He prayed this over people that definitely and literally had eyes and literally had ears. So it's clearly a spiritual sight and a spiritual discernment to hear that if you can hear it early, it's way more powerful. It's way easier life. It's way less painful than if you can see it and hear it later. But he does use missionaries and people like us to be the people that deliver these messages.
He does. But that, you know what, that attitude that you just talked about, that's been like a life value for mine, in the sense of, I guess the only word that comes to my mind is have the humility to acknowledge that you are probably not as good as something as you think you are. You're not as good in a place as you think you are. And when someone gives you advice, like, they are probably right. Like, have, you know, wisdom and discern, decipher, but, you know, the humility. And I heard you in the other podcast mention the same thing. Why make the mistake when someone else has already made it for you and is telling you, you know, the lesson, the experience, and trust, like trust. And that's why, you know, wise counsel, Proverbs 17 times, God speaks through the wise counsel of many. Keyword wise counsel, right? Guys who are a year, 5, 10, 20 years ahead of you. Like JP the other day, we have our first baby. He says, man, the nights are long, but the years are quick. Enjoy every moment. And I'm like, don't skip over that. Like, that as a father's passing advice as he's watching his kids go into high school and drive off to college in the next couple of years, like really saturate and take that to heart. And, you know, embrace these long nights ahead as if it was all you had. And yeah, man. Well, hey, thank you so much, man. This, for people listening, they don't understand. This has been the most mess of a recording I've ever had. Is this probably top three for you? we're actually, fun fact, we're talking on the cell phone right now and then recording it separately on a recording software. It's like as ghetto as it gets. But bro, thank you so much for being a trooper, and I admire and respect you so much from afar. And yeah, I guess we get to hang out a little bit more here in a couple months, right?
Dude, I'm pumped to have you guys in Nashville and see what God's doing here in our city and our nation and even during our generation right now.
Amen. Dude, I think it's always been a special time to live if you have ever lived on earth, but this feels like a really special time to be part of the church. I think it's super, super exciting. So, best way to find you, Grant, Instagram?
Is that your go-to? Instagram. Luckily, there's two that I found Grant Skeletons in the world. I'm one of them, and now there is a second, but it helps you get... he's an older person, so I got to the websites and the Instagrams first. So the only Grant Skeldon, at Grant Skeldon, grantskeldon.com, and then also have a podcast with Will Chung, who I know you interviewed for this series. And me and Will Chung have a podcast called Next Up, where we just recently talked to JP about getting over what people think about you. And we're actually about to drop an episode with Lecrae about how to keep your soul intact while you pioneer new spaces.
So great. Yeah, I was listening to the one with JP again from the retreat, right? So good, talking about Moses.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love it. I love, you know, one thing that you do, we'll close on this, is you, JP, a couple other great leaders, you guys do such a good job of saying, hey, this is what happened, but think of the thousand other ways that this scripture or story could have gone down. So it's obviously so much on purpose and with so much intention that what happened, happened.
Thank you, man. Hey, bro, you and Kate are... when I did the Next Gen Summit, we asked on the survey, what are some of the top topics of about 25 different topics that the next generation of leaders is focused on and concerned about? And, you know, so many young adult conferences or even if young adult ministries, the secret sauce is to do something around dating. And so I often felt like, man, maybe I shouldn't do that because it's kind of what people expect. But it made the top five. And so I think the work that you guys are doing is at top of mind for people. It's relevant. It's happening every day. And so I know there's been years of faithfulness in y'all's end. And I think, again, God's just getting started with what y'all are doing.
Amen. I mean, you can take Kate. I got the easy part of co-parenting coming in. You know, she was the single parent for forever. So I have the easy job here. But all right, but I'll take all the credit. That works too. hey, bro, thank you so much. Love you.
Love you too, man. See you.